Yes.
I have a question. Partly in reflection to the part that you talked about the radiance of the flower.
Yeah.
I've, for the past couple of days, been across the street, and in the courtyard they have many roses.
Uh-huh.
And I've quite often enjoyed looking at them, whether the bloom is full or haven't opened or has bloomed and is not there. And so, in doing so, I began to think, why do we cultivate beauty?
Mm-hmm.
Is it because of the ephemerality of the flower? Does the beauty come from the fact that it's so quickly dissipating? Does it come from the expectation of a bud which at any moment might burst?
Yeah.
Or is it the cycle and intending to the flowers? Does the beauty arise from contemplating that cycle?
Mm-hmm.
So I was curious about what you might offer with that.
Well, what comes to mind is all of the above. And that all of it is aspects of beauty. But I think it's paying attention to how beauty in its different forms or at different manifestations, how it does affect us. But then also, one of the ways that beauty is how do we hold it? Because appreciating it is one thing, but then, grasping after it, searching for it all the time, having to have it, it crushes it. So there's an idiom in the scriptural language that the Buddha uses as a distillation of all of the teachings. And it's in the scriptural language, sabbe dhamma nalana bini vaisaya. So nothing whatsoever should be clung to. So, and that's how you can be happy. That's how you can be peaceful. So that, in that sense of, and it's not that one dismisses, that's not a dismissal of beauty, or a dismissal of happiness, but it's sort of, they're acknowledging it and being able to let it be something that is impermanent, that is built up out of conditions, that may or may not be there. Then you're happy. I had the good fortune to spend time with good teachers, and many here have had time to be with Master Hua, who's another great teacher. And they had a real enjoyment of the world, not in a chasing after it, but in just, the world is like this, and isn't that wonderful? And isn't it weird? and so that there's, I think one of the thing I recently had my mother came to visit the monastery in Baigiri in April, And she said, she told me that she was starting to clear out all her stuff. And I mean, she's going to be 100, so it's about time. So but one of the things that she had saved was all the letters I wrote from when I first went off traveling, and then when I got to the monastery, and I had no idea. And anyway, there's a whole box that got back to the monastery. Debbie brought it back, and I can't bring myself to read it. But there was one letter that I did write where I was describing, because I was trying to tell my parents about Ajahn Chah's five-year plan. It was written in 1976, so it was like my second year as a monk. And I was trying to break them into the reality that I was going to be there much longer than I originally said. That Ajahn Chah said, you commit to 5 years to begin with. But when I was telling my parents about that, then I was saying one of the things that really inspires me or draws me to do that is just having watched Ajahn Chah for the past couple of years and just seeing how unshakable he is in the midst of all of the things that are happening around him, and how warm and compassionate his response to the people around, whether it's the monastics or the lay community. And so that was if I could get a little bit of that, that'd be great. So it's there's not a pushing away of, say, happiness or beauty, but there's really, I mean, we talk about a transcendent level. It's not otherworldly. It's really here, but it's not entangled. That's very beautiful.